We'll go on to case number 5. And that is 03-1515, Anchor Glass versus Ulrich Buschmeier.
Caller, can you hear me all right?
You know something?
It can be adjusted.
If we can readjust it.
Okay. Just if you'll trust me, I'll move them up.
No. Let the engineer.
Let the experts handle it.
Slash Marshall, slash friend, slash all around wonderful person, slash. See, that's a little secret.
Oh.
If I think they. Yeah, you can play with it.
As high as it goes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
May it please the court. My name is Jeff McDermott, and my colleague Matt Straczynski and I are here today representing the appellant, Anchor Glass Container Corporation. The issue involved in this case. This is a granting of a motion for judgment on the pleadings, which went against our client, and the issue presented really is whether a foreign arbitration involving an entity known as G&G Investments and the appellees, the Buschmeiers, serves as res judicata to preclude the claims which Anchor Glass, our client, is now bringing against the Buschmeiers.
Mr. McDermott, how did this case get filed in Indiana?
Interesting question, Your Honor. The Buschmeiers are German citizens.
Right.
They, I believe, if I recall correctly, have a child who attends or attended college somewhere in northern Indiana. They were subject to service then when they came into the state of Indiana under service rules. We were able to serve them there so that we could then bring our suit against them.
Huh. How is that a basis for venue in Indiana?
I apologize. I don't recall the exact site. It's not been challenged by the appellees, and I think I don't recall the exact determination, but we had determined early on through our research that a foreign party who was served here could be suit could be brought against them here in the federal district court, and like I say, it's not been challenged by the other side, and we have proceeded.
But you are strongly arguing that Indiana law ought to apply because the case is venued in Indiana, and that the law of the forum state should apply. And I don't see any connection to Indiana whatsoever in this entire lawsuit.
You know, at this point, and we've studied that intently, both as we briefed and following the briefing, and I think that we're in agreement with, frankly, the district court at this point, and I think probably all parties are in agreement that the choice of law issue really is sort of an academic issue at this point. The res judicata law, whether it's federal law, whether it's Pennsylvania law, or whether it's Indiana law, is largely the same. There's some mm-hmm. different standards. Federal law is slightly broader in its scope. But the issues that we're bringing before this court are, was Anchor a party to the arbitration? And that's an issue regardless of which law applies. And are the claims being presented here the claims that were presented in the arbitration? And that also is the same regardless of which law applies. So for our purposes, it truly is somewhat of an academic question, and we believe that those two questions, regardless of the law that applies, get resolved in favor of Anchor. If I may, the brief facts of this case are that the parties here are, as you know, fairly diverse. Anchor is a corporation located in Tampa, Florida. The Buschmeiers are residents of the country of Germany. G&G Investments, not a party to this lawsuit, was a party to the arbitration. It is, in fact, it's a Pittsburgh corporation, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania corporation. It is, in fact, while it is not a party to this litigation, it is, in fact, the parent company, or was at relevant times the parent company of Anchor. Hiya is a company in Germany that G&G was attempting to purchase through the Buschmeyers. And back in 1998, G&G entered into negotiations with the Buschmeyers to purchase Hiya. Those negotiations culminated on, I believe, September 5th, when a purchase agreement was signed between G&G and the Buschmeyers to purchase Hiya. Hiya is a glass manufacturer, and it also develops glass technology.
You know, Mr. McDermott, I'm going to ask you a question because you don't have all that much time. Why did the chief operating officer of Anchor demand a writing guaranteeing that G&G would be repaid if the deal fell through? See, because the fact that Anchor was trying to protect G&G sort of suggests that the companies were privies.
It's an excellent question, Your Honor, and that was somewhat fleshed out during the arbitration, but it is not clear what took place between the oral conversation that Rick DeNew, the president and CFO of Anchor, had with Mr. Buschmeyer. There was a conversation, and the facts that we've alleged, which must be resolved in light most favorable to our client, are that there was an oral promise on the 7th of September 1998 made by Mr. Buschmeyer directly to Mr. DeNew that Anchor would be repaid the money if this Hiya transaction did not proceed or was terminated for any reason. Time was of the essence, that money had to be sent to the Buschmeyers by the 8th of September, or the Buschmeyers wouldn't be able to purchase certain minority interests and the whole deal would fall apart. So time, according to the Buschmeyers, was of the essence. This was a transaction done literally over the course of, as I understand it, a day or less than a day. Somewhat hard to believe, a $17 million decision being made that quickly and funds being transmitted. But that's exactly what happened. The writing that was required by Mr. DeNew, for reasons that at this point are unknown, no discovery has taken place in our case, was set up so that the Buschmeyers were to repay G&G in the event that the transaction failed. So really we had two different agreements, one between the Buschmeyers and Anchor to repay Anchor directly, and one in this writing that said that G&G would be paid directly.
Let me just make one thing clear to myself. It's your view that the Buschmeyers have gotten this unbelievable windfall for doing nothing?
At this point, yes, Your Honor, that's absolutely true. The Buschmeyers received $17.3 million wired directly from Anchor to Mrs. Buschmeyer's account in Germany. The understanding was that if the Hiya transaction did not go through and they did not purchase the minority interest and sell Hiya to G&G, that Anchor would receive that money back. G&G went into an arbitration. There was this Hiya purchase agreement, had an arbitration provision which required any disputes between G&G and the Buschmeyers to be arbitrated. Anchor was not a party to that purchase agreement, so Anchor was not a party to the arbitration. In the arbitration, the claims asserted by G&G were that the purchase agreement should be completely rescinded because of this September 8th letter that said G&G would be repaid the money in the event that the transaction didn't go through. G&G argued not for damages, but for a rescission of the entire contract. There were to be three payments made. The first one was made directly by Anchor to Mrs. Buschmeyer. Investors in Canada fell through for G&G. The transaction didn't go through, and as a result, the transaction fell apart. G&G arbitrated that to rescind the contract and, frankly, not be responsible for any further payments and just put everybody back at the status quo. The Buschmeyers actually counterclaimed in that arbitration and said, no, in fact, we get to keep the $17 million, and you owe us the next two payments. To this day, the Buschmeyers have the $17.3 million. Anchor has not been repaid, and the transaction was never completed. Now, the questions presented really are, was Anchor a party to the arbitration proceeding? And are the claims that were asserted in the arbitration proceeding the same claims that Anchor is trying to assert here? Let me take the latter question first. Are the claims the same? In the arbitration proceeding, the claim that was advanced by G&G was a claim for rescission. They wanted the entire purchase agreement, to which Anchor wasn't even a party, just undone. And the arbitration panel said, no, we're not going to rescind it because it wasn't subject to obtaining financing. Under this agreement, you were obligated to go forward with the deal. The Bushmeyers counterclaimed, not against Anchor, because Anchor wasn't a party to the arbitration. They counterclaimed against G&G and said, we want to essentially get specific performance. We want the rest of the money, and then we'll complete the deal. The arbitration panel found in favor of the Bushmeyers and determined that, in fact, G&G owed the rest of the money, the next two payments. In our case, we weren't a party to that. Mr. Deneau was a witness, certainly, at that arbitration proceeding, but he was not a party, and Anchor was not a party. And the claims advanced here are for breach of an oral promise made by Mr. Bushmeyer only to Anchor. That oral promise was never made to G&G.
That oral promise was reduced to writing in the letter agreement and crafted in such a way as the repayment would occur to G&G, and that was the subject of arbitration, was it not?
That was the subject of G&G attempting to use that writing to argue that the purchase agreement should be rescinded. They weren't suing on a breach of that agreement. They were using that agreement to suggest that the entire purchase agreement between G&G and the Bushmeyers should be rescinded. That's very different from what we're doing. We're seeking to, based on an oral promise made to us, we've asserted claims of breach of an oral contract, promissory estoppel, conversion, unjust enrichment. We have equitable claims here. G&G simply wasn't a party to the arbitration proceeding. In fact, really couldn't have been because it wasn't subject to the arbitration provision in the purchase agreement since it wasn't a party to that. So our view is, under two bases, we were not a party to the arbitration, and the claims we're asserting here are not rescission claims. They're actually quite different, and they're seeking to a return and to hold the Bushmeyers to the obligation that they made to repay us in the event that this Hyatt transaction failed, and in fact, that's what happened.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. My name is Jeff Blasey, and I represent the Bushmeyers in this matter.
Is it true, Mr. Blasey, that the Bushmeyers have just received a $17.5 million windfall?
There are two answers to that, Your Honor. The first one is, assuming it is true, that's the result of a final judgment being entered by a court of competent jurisdiction, and is hence not subject to review now or to collateral attack in Indiana. The second answer is the ruling was that they were obligated to complete the contract and deliver the stock once payment was made, and that hasn't occurred yet. And in fact, there's a collection action currently underway with respect to the remaining three payments. So perhaps that's an unanswered question at this point in terms of them receiving a windfall.
To what extent was the letter agreement part of the arbitration?
A substantial extent. All of this, not only the letter agreement, which was drafted by Mr. Deneau, that was a finding made in the final award. It's also attached to the complaint that Anchor has filed. And if anyone questions the similarity between these two claims, you can compare the factual allegations made in the complaint to the findings that amount to 429 findings in the final award, and there's virtually a one-to-one correlation between the two.
Did you want to finish your thought?
We're talking about here is a new legal theory, not a new claim.
If Anchor isn't a party to the arbitration agreement, how can it be bound by the arbitration? I mean, doesn't a party have to expressly consent to arbitration before being bound to it?
No, Your Honor. The arbitration decision is recognized as a final judgment, and that point has been conceded by the plaintiffs in this matter.
Let me ask you another question. How exactly was it in G&G's investment interest in the arbitration to see to it that Anchor was repaid?
Because G&G ultimately is owes the money to Anchor. Anchor funded the first installment payment. And as a matter of fact, this is probably a good time to point out as any, the arbitral or the tribunal, the ICC, recognized early on in the proceedings that the issue, whether at the end of the day the $30 million would really go back into the bank account in Canada or elsewhere, held in the name of any of the claimants' companies, is another matter for discussion and reflection. They acknowledge that there may be a question of whether it goes back to Anchor or goes to G&G. And you'll see that throughout the arbitration and the findings. they say, well, you know, whether it's to go back to Anchor or G&G, the ultimate finding was it doesn't have to go back to anybody, and that the Bushmires were entitled to keep it. But they speak of Anchor as substituting itself for G&G, and that language is, you'll see throughout the decision.
So one of the claims in the arbitration was for return of the money?
Yeah, the way I understand it, yes. On a rescission argument, but yes, to be returned to the status quo would be returning.
So the arbitration was for rescission of the purchase agreement and essentially restitutionary
basically,
return of
yeah,
the...
Yeah, you know, the dispute was Bush money, you know, Anchor gives G&G the money to pay the first installment. Anchor gets worried, understandably so, the tribunal says. Rick Deneau, Anchor's president, negotiates a repayment agreement, and we'll look at that in detail, and we'll question Rick Deneau in detail about that. And they say, we'll see what those negotiations mean and what they have, what effect they have on the rights of the respective parties, you know, and all of that, including the final agreement of September 8th. And they made findings on that basis. And the finding was that, no, there was no obligation for the Bushmires to return the money. And, in fact, there had been some less than good faith dealing on the part of Anchor's president, Rick Deneau.
See, we don't normally treat parent and subsidiary corporation as if they were the very same entity with the same interests. Why should we do so here? I mean, aren't Anchor and G&G separate entities?
Yes. I mean, as a simple matter, we're not arguing, well, Anchor is the subsidiary of G&G, therefore they're privy. It's not quite that simple. The fact is their interests were adjudicated in this matter. I mean, it's explicit. It's really not that complicated if you look at it. They say Anchor was concerned that it wouldn't get its money back, therefore Anchor's Rick Deneau negotiated a repayment agreement, etc. And there are actually factors that the Seventh Circuit has identified which apply here. On that very issue of a finding of privity. First of all, it's not required that someone be a party to the previous litigation. That's never been a requirement for res judicata analysis. The question is, you know, party or your privy, whether as a practical matter your interests were represented by the party in the previous litigation such that you should be bound by that decision. It's extremely difficult to find that not to be the case here. Other factors supporting a finding of privity include control or participation in the earlier litigation. I think you have that in Rick Deneau here. Testifying on behalf of G&G. And also, in terms of negotiations, the plaintiffs concede he was negotiating on behalf of Anchor. That's in the complaint. Deliberate maneuvering to avoid the effects of the first case. I would suggest that's here. What you're doing is you're trying to carve out this. Well, on the 7th, we had these negotiations, which were culminating on the 8th, the written agreement. But, you know, there's also this question of maybe, because we were vague based on our complaint, we can argue there was maybe a verbal decision on the 7th that Rick Deneau negotiated two conflicting agreements within the space of a day of each other. And now we're trying to enforce the first one, apparently. Or a close relationship between the parties to the various cases. And I think, under, you know, unquestionably you have that here.
If G&G had prevailed in the arbitration, Anchor's interests would have also prevailed?
Certainly.
Necessarily?
Yes.
G&G was seeking the money back.
Right, which they owed to Anchor, because Anchor had funded G&G. G&G's a shell corporation. That was found here. Anchor had the money, so they couldn't pay the first installment, so they went to their subsidiary, and there's some other issues between those parties that have nothing to do with this. But ultimately, it's not that complicated a transaction when you break it down to its essentials.
Can you see any opportunity where the Bushmires might have to pay this back?
I would be going into areas that I really am not familiar with. From my understanding of the arbitration, if the money is ultimately paid to them, they have an obligation to deliver the stock in the future. You know, I really wouldn't want to speculate beyond that.
Is this suit premature in some way?
No. No. Those issues actually are addressed here in terms of there may be an issue of the failure to completely pay the first installment as maybe jeopardizing some of the abilities of the Bushmires to ultimately deliver the stock, and that may be something that might ultimately come about, but I really wouldn't comment on that. Anchor's claim, though, for the return of the initial installment clearly was the central focus of this arbitration, and it was decided, and it was finally decided. Same set of core operative facts, same negotiations, same statements, same writings, same people, same examination of the motivations and their significance under the controlling law of that arbitration. It's been fully and completely decided. And now Anchor is asking that exercise to be repeated by Judge Lee and his staff in the Northern District of Indiana. And that's precisely the sort of circumstance that res judicata is designed to prevent.
Is there anything unjust that's happened here?
Yes, that my client has been put to the expense of this litigation.
Oh, okay.
And you can
bothered by that $17 million for nothing.
If I were, it would not be my place to make that argument here today. And respectfully, it's not a consideration that bears on the res judicata analysis. Unless the court has anything further.
Well, I guess we don't sit as a court of equity anymore.
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, of course. 2 minutes.
I think the questions from Your Honors and some of the comments by Mr. Blasi kind of demonstrate the need for this case to go beyond the pleading stage where it has been cut short. As you know, you sit here reviewing this de novo, and under the standard to apply, you are to, and as the district court was, to resolve all well-pled facts favorably to Anchor, and to only affirm in this case if it can be demonstrated that Anchor can't prove any fact which would support its claims. And I think that you've already seen that there are a number of facts that need to be fleshed out, and the case ought to, at a minimum, proceed and let discovery determine whether some of these facts support the appellee's claim that, in fact, this has res judicata effect.
As succinctly as you can, what's the most important of those facts?
Two, Your Honor. Anchor was not a party to the arbitration and couldn't have been, because it was an arbitration that was called pursuant to a contract that Anchor wasn't a party to. And secondly, that we have claims here that are different, that are based upon oral representations and promises made only to Anchor, not to G&G, and that those claims now are resulting in breaches of oral contract and other types of claims that are distinct and different from the rescission claim, and that was the only claim asserted by G&G in the arbitration proceeding. You're right. There is, I will take issue, there's a great injustice here, a $17.3 million injustice, money that has gone over to Germany into the bank account of Mrs. Buschmeier, and Anchor has received nothing in contradiction to the promise made by the Buschmeiers.
We've just been told, though, that the letter agreement was the subject of the arbitration, and that G&G was, in the context of that arbitration, seeking the money, the return of the money.
I think that was misstated slightly by counsel. It was a subject, the letter agreement was a subject to the arbitration for purposes of G&G arguing that the Hiya purchase agreement between it and the Buschmeier should be rescinded. And the arbitration panel said, no, you have an arbitration agreement here that says that it's not subject to your inability to get financing, that they get to keep the money, and you can't argue, G&G, that because you couldn't get financing for the next two payments, that the deal is off. It's completely different from Anchor's claim, a separate promise made to Anchor to essentially bridge for a couple of days.
If G&G had won the arbitration, would it have secured the return of the money, which then would have flowed through to your client?
Actually, Your Honor, I don't know the answer to that, and simply because the transaction was done so quickly. I don't believe, to my knowledge, and there's nothing in the record to indicate this, and counsel and I weren't party to the arbitration or weren't counsel to the arbitration, I don't believe that there was any type of repayment provision or contract between Anchor and G&G. Now, I suspect as a matter of fair dealing, that's exactly what would have happened, and I would have hoped that people would have been honorable and done that.
In connection with the rescission claim that was the subject of the arbitration, was G&G seeking restitution in the form of a return of that initial payment?
In the sense that they were seeking to put the parties back in the status quo.
Okay, yes. So it wasn't just rescind the contract, keep the money. It was rescind the contract, give us back the money.
Yes, but the arbitration panel actually said that G&G wasn't seeking damages. They were seeking rescission. The arbitration panel said that. Anchor is seeking damages. it's a slight difference, and I think it helps identify or spell out the difference in the types
it's
of claims.
It's more than a slight difference. It's a really important difference. If the subject of the arbitration was not just the rescission of the purchase agreement, but the enforceability of the letter agreement calling for the return of the money, and also the remedy sought was not just rescission of the contract but the return of the money, then we have an identity of the causes of action, regardless of how you label them. And then we get to the privity issue.
Correct. If you take that argument, and if you were to determine in your judgment that that was true, you still have to determine that Anchor was also a party to that arbitration, which it wasn't. Okay. Both have to be true for res judicata to apply.
Okay. All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both, Mr. Blasi, and thank you, Mr. McDermott. And the case will be taken under advisement.